Welcome to Tech Tuesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher. In December 2017, the Federal Communications Commission voted to gut rules that prohibited blocking or discriminating against legal content on the internet. That gave internet service providers the power to block content at their own discretion. The issue of so-called net neutrality has returned to the fore with two bills in Congress aimed at restoring the Obama-era rules. Journalist McKenna Kelly covers net neutrality for The Verge. She joins us by phone. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
You wrote that Democrats want to make the internet a utility under Title II of the Communications Act. What's the significance of making it a utility?
Sure. So Democrats have seen this as a way to avoid some kind of judicial inquiry from it. So basically before, one of the only ways that the rules were able to be upheld by the Supreme Court was by using Title II. And it's something that they've been pushing with a lot of lashback from the Republicans.
Why?
So they kind of just want to get rid of the Communications Decency Act, the Communications Act entirely. When it comes to like utilities and Title I and Title II, they kind of see these as old rules that have it's about time for them to rewrite these rules and just get rid of them entirely. But it's something that gives the FCC greater authority over regulating them in the first place. So it's unclear what it would look like without Title II.
So if they make the internet a utility under Title II of the Communications Act, that would take it away from the control of the FCC.
Yes, and that's okay. The Democrats' main concern here.
And you're saying the Democrats want to get rid of the Communications Act, or is it the Republicans?
It's the Republicans.
Okay.
So, yeah, it seems like the industry and Republicans don't want the FCC to have as much authority as they previously did under the Obama-era regulations.
Are Republicans and Democrats fundamentally opposed on the issue of net neutrality?
So this is where things get a little bit fishy. Get a little bit unclear. So a lot of Republicans are proposing their own bills that would, put in like the significant pillars of net neutrality when it comes to no blocking, no throttling, the basic elements like that. The main disagreement is this Title I, Title II classifications underneath the Communications Act.
Okay, so they're not opposed to net neutrality, but they do want to keep the FCC, they're opposed to how much power the FCC has.
That's what it looks like, yes.
What about the current court case challenging the legal reasoning for repealing net neutrality? What's going on with that?
Sure. So they have the first oral arguments, a couple months ago now. So we're kind of waiting to see what happens. Everyone made their case with Mozilla and the FCC, and everyone got up and kind of discussed. And it's unclear what's going to happen there. A lot of commissioners don't want to talk on the record about whether or not they see the PI order being struck down. It's kind of unclear what's going to happen.
What is coming out of the president's administration? What's coming out of the Trump administration on this?
Sure. So the administration has been pretty quiet on this. It seems like Ajit Pai has done a lot of the talking for the administration. It's his position.
The head of the FCC, right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to kind of make these claims, and like really discuss what the administration's position is on it.
You're listening to Tech Tuesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher. If you have a question or comment about net neutrality, my guest is McKenna Cully. She covers net neutrality for The Verge. You can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. What hurdles, or sort of both bills, one's been introduced in the House, another one's been introduced in the Senate, both of them are sponsored by Democrats. What, even if it passes in the House, it still has to go through the Senate. What are the hurdles ahead?
Sure. So even a couple of weeks ago, it would have to make it through committee. And the head of the Commerce Committee, Senator Roger Wicker from Mississippi, he doesn't think that there's really any reason to pass a net neutrality bill. He doesn't really see net neutrality as a priority. Right now, he's working really hard on pushing through a data privacy bill, which seems to be Congress's main concern this session. So it would have to make its way through committee, and then it would somehow have to reach that, you know what I mean, that two-thirds vote majority in order to pass through. But, I mean, we'd have to see what how leaders are going to whip this, because if you were paying attention a couple months ago, if you're really into net neutrality, the Senate was able to pass a discharge petition, which forced a vote, and they got enough Republicans to pass net neutrality in the Senate, and then that failed eventually in the House.
So we're kind when it was controlled by the Republicans, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So. So things have changed. I mean, the players have changed. That makes all the difference in the world. Could they have the same kind of thing go through the Senate again, this time getting to be embraced by the Democrat-controlled House?
Sure. So that's something we're going to have to see. So Nancy Pelosi in the House said that she wants to take a vote up on this bill in a matter of weeks, which is pretty quick for Congress. And so we'll have to see whether or not they can get all the Democrats in the House in the first place, because right now several Democrats aren't even co-sponsors on the bill. And then when it moves to the Senate, we'll have to see. So that's also up to Mitch McConnell mm-hmm. to decide whether or not it gets a floor vote in the first place. So mm-hmm. it's kind of unclear where this is moving, but it should be exciting.
What about the activists out there? I remember when the FCC was voting on this in 2017, there seemed to be a lot of activism surrounding it, and a lot of that has settled down. You don't hear much about it. What's going on with that?
Sure. So it kind of seems like a lot of the activism, everybody's ready for net neutrality to be decided and to be over, it feels like. But there still is a lot of activism. So groups like Fight for the Future and Free Press are still out there, you know what I mean, pushing for this bill and calling out senators who aren't currently co-sponsoring the bill or have voted against net neutrality in the past. So they're still working really hard to push this through. But at this point, it kind of just seems like everyone, lawmakers and activists and just everyday consumers, want to know, well, what are net neutrality rules? Are we just going to flip-flop with each incoming administration? Mm-hmm. Like, let's get this legislation in place so we can stop flip-flopping and know exactly where we're going.
And the big tech companies, they oppose net neutrality. They want to have the big service providers, want to have the power to change what kind of access they have. But while the FCC 2017 FCC ruling was in place, did anybody notice any changes?
Sure. So this is kind of where a lot of there's a lot of dueling data right now. So the FCC, the Pi administration, likes to say ever since they got rid of net neutrality, there's been so much more investment. You know what I mean? It's really boosted the economy, but those are a lot of it's a lot of dueling perspectives, and it's really unclear. And it's good to note that the 2015 Obama era rules were only put in place for about a year or 2 years before they were removed. So the industry was likely still trying to get a handle of what it was like to operate under those rules. And it's kind of the same with what's going on now with the Pi order. Nobody really wants to make any significant changes. There haven't really been any. The industry hasn't really been challenging net neutrality. Like, we haven't been seeing our Netflix being throttled or anything because, I mean, there's still the court case pending.
Well, and already, you know, people should know that when you Google something, you should go down deep to make sure you're not missing. Things get buried.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Anyway.
But it's significant to know that a lot of big tech companies, so like Facebook, Google, all of them support net neutrality. The difference here is between companies like AT&T, Comcast, and Verizon.
The providers, right.
Exactly. So who it more directly affects.
Well, McKenna Kelly, thanks for joining us. I appreciate your time today.
Yeah, it was great. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. McKenna Kelly covers net neutrality for The Verge. We'll have more Tech Tuesday coming up on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to Tech Tuesday on All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. A six-year-old Ohio boy has missed months of school since March 2018 when he was diagnosed with acute lymphoblastic leukemia. His teacher wondered if technology could help Levi Suttles follow along from home. At the same time, the Ohio State Engineering Department asked teachers at Miami View Elementary School in South Charleston if they needed help with any projects. And that's where Bill Darling, Director of Assistive Technology of Ohio, comes in. He joins us by phone now. Welcome back, Bill Darling.
Thank you, Ann. It's great to be here.
Assistive Technology of Ohio, AT Ohio, is a federally funded nonprofit organization that's part of the College of Engineering at Ohio State. How did you get involved in Levi Suttles' case?
Well, we've had for a couple of years now, we just started a program looking at the possibility of bringing these types of telepresence robots into schools. We've been gradually growing the program for about 2 years now. And we just basically have been reaching out to superintendents across the state and letting them know the program exists. And through some other partners that we have, like Children's Hospital and the Developmental Disabilities Council, we've just been gradually learning about more and more cases where kids could really benefit from this kind of technology.
So it's a robot. Tell us about how it works.
Well, there's several different kinds of telepresence robots. The two that we have in our program, one is called a double and one is called a beam, but he's using a double, Levi is, where it's basically, you know, it's kind of like a Segway. If you know what a Segway is, that you ride around on the
Right.
So you put it's a Segway with an iPad on it, and he's at home with an iPad, and they both are logged in under the same app. And so basically he's able to control through that app, control the robot. A lot of it is FaceTime. I mean, he's just seeing and hearing what the iPad in the classroom that's on the robot is seeing and hearing. Mm-hmm. But it has the additional ability to move not only around the classroom and turn left and right, but it also has, if he has a class that's down the hall for, say, third period, then you just go down the hall. You run the thing down the hall and go down to Mrs. Johnson's class or whatever. And so you have basically the ability to go through your school day as any other student would. You'd just be doing it from either at home or in some cases from a hospital.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Levi's a kindergartner, right?
I believe he is.
Yeah.
We were just down in South Charleston a couple weeks ago, and he's one of our newest cases. But he's probably, Levi is the youngest kid we've ever had that has been put in charge of one of these things.
Well, of course, he's a digital native, so he's probably having a blast doing it, right?
Right. No, the learning curve for the kids is a lot shorter than it is for the teachers or the parents. The kids take to it very quickly, and the adjustment period is very short. It really is not a difficult technology for them to master at all.
You're listening to Tech Tuesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about using technology in the classroom to help children, students. Right now we're talking about a five-year-old in South Charleston, Ohio, be present in the classroom by way of a robot. My guest is Bill Darling. He's director of Assistive Technology. It's a federally funded nonprofit organization that's part of the College of Engineering at Ohio State. If you have a question or comment for Bill, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. What other kinds of people with other kinds of situations are you using this kind of technology in the classroom with, Bill Darling?
Well, the first case that we had was up in Worthington 2 years ago with a kid named Jacob, who was, in his case, he had a mysterious lung impairment that was not only serious but mysterious. They didn't know what was going on. His lungs were collapsing on him, and his doctors had just recommended that he not be in school out of fear that he was going to catch the sicknesses that kids get when they go to school, and that would have been dangerous for him. So they pulled him from school, because it just by happenstance he was in my daughter's class, that was really the first instance that we started working with. But we have, just through our outreach efforts, been identifying a lot of kids. It can be a disabling medical condition. They can have, for whatever reasons, just have difficulty navigating their way through a school day because just the physical challenges are so great. Or what we have, the majority of our cases, Ann, have actually come through a wonderful partnership that we have with Nationwide Children's, the education people that they have there, For any kid that's going to be involved for a significant amount of time, Children's Hospital also gets involved in their education because that's important. Mm-hmm. And so they've been identifying for us kids with cancer, recently diagnosed cancer cases. And so those are a lot of the cases that we have of kids that are going to have to stay home while they're going through their lengthy treatments. They'll either be at home or they can just be at Children's Hospital and log in and go to school there. It does take a confluence of things. It takes a kid that, for whatever reason, can't go to school, but is also still capable of doing the schoolwork. And so we found it just to be incredibly an important program because of the challenges these kids are going through. Being pulled from school is so socially isolating for them that it kind of compounds what they're going through. Not only do they have these challenges, but they don't see their friends every day. They don't see the teachers, the people that care about them. And so it kind of, you know, for a lot of them, it can be a very depressing situation. But to get them back into the classroom, it can be an uplifting experience to let them know that they're still cared for. They're still part of the community. And it's really weird to think about it this way. But in bringing a robot into their life has been a way to keep a lot of these kids normal during the challenging time. So really the benefits we have seen are not necessarily educational, but they're more social. That just the kids are feeling better about themselves. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're able to be themselves more because they're around their friends all day long. You know, and they need to be at 100% as much as possible if they're going to take on these tough challenges that they have.
What have been some of the challenges of using this kind of technology with students in the classroom?
Well, one of them is that, you know, the double runs on an iPad, and a double, the iPad wasn't made specifically to be the computer for a telepresence robot. And mm-hmm. So sometimes, you know, iPads need updates and things like that. You know, if schools may not have, you need a pretty high quality Wi-Fi system for to be able to make it work, because you're basically, you know, Skyping or doing FaceTime for hours at a time. So if your school Wi-Fi doesn't quite get up to standard, that can make it a real challenge. But overall, once they get familiar with the technology and it gets up and running, the schools have been incredibly supportive, and we haven't had a lot of challenges. There's some cases once we've set it up, they hardly ever have contacted me because it's run so smoothly for them. I just need to be aware that at the end of the year I got to go get the robot. But other than that, there haven't been a lot of challenges. Through the technology has worked wonderful.
It sounds, though, to me like it's another example of how the dearth of broadband in rural areas kind of puts those kids at a disadvantage.
Yeah, they have to have Wi-Fi in the home, mm-hmm. and that can be a challenge. We found that a lot of the schools are equipped with Wi-Fi, but it's got to be a situation where the family has Wi-Fi. And so, yes, that those things have to be present for it to work, and that could certainly be a challenge for a family that's not where their house is from a technological standpoint.
What about the cost of this technology?
Well, the cost to purchase one of these robots, usually it's between $3,000 and $4,000. It depends on if you have to buy the iPad itself. Mm-hmm. The way that we structure the program, there is a monthly lease rate of $80 a month, which does, you know, it's not very much considering a lot of these school districts are having to cover if a kid's out, but they still need to work with them. They're sending mm-hmm. in tutors. They're doing online instruction. So we have an $80 a month fee, but through our work with Nationwide Children, through the Ohio Developmental Disabilities Council, we just recently have been talking to a wonderful Miami Valley charity called Gala of Hope. A lot of these partnering organizations are raising the money that comes to cover the cost so that really there aren't any costs to the school, but ultimately there is a cost, you know, if it doesn't fall under one of those guidelines. But we try to keep it very, very affordable because we want to get this technology out for the kids that are in this tough situation.
Have there been any surprises, any ways that in implementing this technology that you were surprised that you weren't expecting it to work in that way?
Well, I mean, technologically, I think it's worked the way that we expected. Mm-hmm. What has been a pleasant surprise for us was some of these kids have actually the parents swear that they physically have done better. Not, you know, that's not, I don't know how you measure that, but when you get a kid who is sleeping till 11 o'clock in the morning because their tutors don't come till 4 and they're mm-hmm. just isolated, mm-hmm. They've seen just, you know, get the spark back in their eye and they have something to look forward to every day. You know, kids have a job and that job is to go to school It's an incredibly important journey that these kids go through together. And it's important, you know, to do everything that we can to make sure that that kid is as normal as possible. So I think that the real surprise for us has been a good one, whereas it has actually, you know, helped the kids physically during this tough time. It's been a real positive for them.
That they seem to recover and are healthier because they're more socially involved with the rest of the kids.
Right. That their life isn't as interrupted. Yeah. And so it's, you know, it doesn't do anything for them medically, but it keeps them normal, and they need, you know, all hands on deck for a tough situation. So, you know, we feel good about that. We feel good about the role that the technology is playing, because, everyone wants to support these families. The communities rally around them, and it really helps the kid just to be part of that community every day by being able to just beam into a classroom and be with his friends and the teachers that care about him so much.
You're listening to Tech Tuesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher. We are talking about Assistive Technology Ohio. My guest is the director of AT Ohio, Bill Darling, talking about how they're using robots in the classroom to help kids who can't be in the classroom for whatever reason, whether it's a long-term disability or short-term ailment. We're talking as well about a child, Levi, who is 5 years old and is able to attend kindergarten remotely because of this robot. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Shudi in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Shudi.
Hey, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question for Bill Darling. So my son has some spectrum GI disorder, and he's 16 now, and thank God he is much better. But when he was 14, he was in bed for a long time, couldn't go to school for almost 3 months, and he was still not able to go to school, but we had to force him to sometimes. So I researched on this. I came upon similar robot. I don't know, it was through assistive technology. I don't remember now, but I sent that email to the superintendent, Mark Ray, Fallon Dundee Schools, to ask him if he can help provide that so that my son does not miss the classes.
Mm-hmm.
He said, no, we cannot do this for whatever reason, and didn't give me reasons in writing. But I don't know why the Olentangy schools cannot do it, because even sometimes now I asked even in the last 5 or 4 meeting, but they just dodged that question.
Well, Shudi, thank you for your call. I mean, Bill Darling, do you get pushback from districts sometimes that don't want the technology in the classroom?
Well, yes, there are issues that schools need to look at. You do have a live stream coming from a classroom into one home. You have all those issues that, you know, your children will be seen to whatever extent, you know, on that live stream. But it's not any different than Google Classroom or something along those lines. But we have had issues. I mean, schools take their time and they look at this. They've been very supportive. But, you know, you do have a robot that moves around the classroom. What happens if it falls, which it can?
Mm-hmm.
They're not incredibly heavy. But you generally, when you're looking at an issue of streaming what's going on into a classroom, into someone's home, that is something that the school is going to take a look at. And we're happy to discuss the issues and how some of the other schools have looked at it. And we've had schools say no. We've had schools that said they're not ready for it at this time. And that's their decision, and that's fine. It just, we're there to help them understand, you know, exactly how it works and help them make the best decision for their students.
Shudi, thanks for that call. So it's up to the district. My guest, Bill Darling, Director of Assistive Technology in Technology Ohio. Bill, what about the disruptive factor? It's one thing to be in a kindergarten class, but maybe it's another thing to be in a high school science class.
Well, we've just started our first high school case up in Brookfield, which is up by Youngstown. But, you know, it's very disruptive for a few days to have a robot, you know, this beaming power and the kids in classroom by a robot. The kids are amazing. They do tend to get used to things. And, you know, I know that at Worthington Estates, after a while, it was just accepted that this is how Jacob goes to school. And the kids They said hi to Jacob. They talked to him like he was there, and mm-hmm. it wasn't that big of a deal. So it is a very disruptive thing at the start because it's so new, and it's just something that's just exciting. But again, eventually, kids, the excitement wears off, and you're back to a normal school day. And so it's something that kids adjust to, schools adjust to very well. And you know, for as long as the kid needs it, we're happy to have the robot in there and help them go to school.
Dan in Clintonville, you're on the air with Bill Darling of Assistive Technology Ohio. Hi, Dan.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Yeah,
hi, Dan.
My question is, are you conducting this as an experiment where you have a control group that does not have the technology versus the kids who do have the technology to actually get some kind of scientific idea of the benefit versus hearing anecdotally?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's a great question. But we're 9 cases right now. We've had 12 in our history. And we're not really a research-based organization. And again, you know, it's not an educational teaching method, something like that, to try to quantify, one method versus another. But it is a manner to look at whether or not if a kid had to be at home with tutoring versus being beamed into the classroom, that would be a great thing to look at, and that's something we will consider to be able to quantify. You know, we're not the only program in the country that does this. There's probably a lot of schools that are looking at that very issue.
Thanks a lot, Dan, for that call. Anybody else, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is a relatively new thing, Bill Darling. You and I have talked several times over the in past years about what you're doing. Why don't you tell listeners about some of the other sorts of technology you use to help people with disabilities?
Well, our main program is a statewide library of all the different kinds of technologies that can help a person, not just a student, but a person with a disability, whether they want to go to school or whether they're trying to get a job or keep a job or just wanting to live a more independent life. And so one of the unique things about our program is that it doesn't matter what kind of disability it is. As long as you're from the state of Ohio, we probably have a piece of technology that might be of interest to you or might help you do what you're trying to do. And so the way people use our program is just, it doesn't matter if you're trying to use a computer or if you're a person who struggles to speak, we have technology that will allow you to get words on the screen and speak and be your voice for you. It really is. It runs the whole gamut, and it's a very exciting field to work in. But it can be used by any Ohioan or anyone professional that works with an Ohioan with a disability to just come in and try to see if there are ways that they can improve their functional abilities through the use of technology.
And the costs, who bears the cost?
Well, for the library part of it, there is no cost. We purchase these devices. We have them available in our library. We ship them to, if you we help you identify which ones might be a benefit to you. We ship those devices to you. We pay for the shipping. We pay for it to be shipped back. And we just want to get it into people's hands. You know, it's a hard, there's no real places to go, no stores to go to learn about this stuff. No place to go to where it goes across the whole disability spectrum. So there's one of us in every state. There's a program in every state. And AT Ohio is Ohio's program where you can we exist to get this stuff out there, get it into your hands so you know what's available, you know what's possible, and then you make good decisions. You know, some of this stuff can be very expensive and you don't want to go out and buy a $5,000 or $6,000 device unless you're sure exactly this is what I've tried it, I know what it is, I know it'll help me. Because it's a significant investment, whether or not you're the one doing it or whether it's going through Medicaid or some other type of program.
Who tends to contact you first when it comes to these kinds of devices like we're talking about today? Is it a teacher? Is it a school administrator? Is it a parent? Who does it tend to be?
Well, we've done a lot of outreach to the schools. Mm-hmm. And what we found is that, you know, in a lot of the smaller school districts, your superintendent might be in the building. You might be just down the hall. And so we've had a lot of luck just reaching out to the schools themselves, and that, you know, superintendents tend to be aware of cases like this, and if they understand what we're sending to them and they think that there's a case there, then they'll pass it along to the appropriate person. So we've had a lot of luck just with our outreach to the schools and have them contact us directly. But, you know, anyone can contact us. Families can contact us directly. But a lot of times it works better if a school does, because you know, you got to have that, you got to have that cooperation with the school, because that's where you're going to be bringing the technology to ultimately.
Right. You got to have the school's cooperation. But what kind of rights do people with disabilities have in getting districts? Because there is, you know, the Education of All Children Act, that they're supposed to be using whatever you can to give a child an education.
Right. And this technology is kind of a unique one in that it doesn't address a specific teaching style. It's a presence technology. And for, you know, every school district makes their different decisions on whether or not this is an appropriate one. A lot of it, Ian, has to deal with how long is the child gone, going to be out of the classroom? How many hours during the day are they going to be able to even be up and be present? You know, if it's only for half an hour a day, it's probably not worth doing. Mm-hmm. But we've had kids that have gone for 8 hours a day. Every day on this, they're able to do that. So there are a lot of decisions that school districts have to make. We're there to help them make those decisions. But, you know, there are a lot of players that and a lot of factors that need to be considered before bringing this in.
Mackenzie in Columbus, you're on the air with Bill Darling. Hi, Mackenzie.
Hi there. I'm a special education professional in the schools, and I was wondering if you'd ever heard of the term least restrictive environment?
Yeah,
right.
And if that had ever been an arguing point for allowing a child to allowed to have this technology?
Well, that's a term that we're familiar with. You know, they're supposed to be allowed to go to school within a least restrictive environment. You know, that is an argument that people make. We haven't had a lot of issues from schools, honestly, not wanting to do it. Just a couple have had some issues. But, you know, in general, the schools have been very, very receptive to having it in. So, you know, there are arguments against it, but I would say overwhelmingly it's been a really positive experience.
Mackenzie, what do you think?
I think it's an amazing way for kids to be able to access their classroom. In my line of work, I'm a speech therapist. I see kids who have multiple disabilities or wouldn't be able to go into the classroom otherwise, but it's not fair that they can't still participate in that classroom environment in some way.
And you see this as a nice option.
Yeah, I do. I'm all for technology to help with anything. Earlier he mentioned speech devices, which is something I'm familiar with. So anything that can help a kid be successful, I'm all for it.
Well, thanks for the call, Mackenzie. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
Take care. And Bill Darling, thanks for taking some time out of what I hope is a vacation in Florida and talking to us about this. I appreciate it.
The beach awaits, but thank you, Anna. It was a real pleasure to talk to you, always.
Bill Darling, Director of Assistive Technology Ohio. That is a federally funded nonprofit organization, part of the College of Engineering at Ohio State. They have helped a six-year-old in South Charleston attend his kindergarten class while he is working on a cure for leukemia. So we have more tech Tuesday coming up. Stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to Tech Tuesday on All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Disney joins the world of streaming services later this year when it launches Disney Plus, featuring family favorites such as Finding Nemo and other original content. Joining us by phone to talk Disney and other tech news is Android Central contributing editor Russell Holly. Welcome back, Russell.
Thank you.
So how long has this been in the works? Disney's always working on a million things.
Disney is always working on a million things, but we've known about Disney streaming service for a little over a year now. It got a name close to the end of last year called Disney Plus, and we've kind of been getting little bits of additional information ever since the announcement was first made, and the most recent being that Disney wants this to be the single resource for all of its classic movies. The entire thing that we went through 15 years ago where movies were being locked in the Disney vault to be released again, you know, a decade later, all of that is, according to Disney anyway, going away, and you'll be able to access the entire Disney catalog from the streaming service.
Yeah, but isn't this is the reason why Jessica Jones isn't on Netflix anymore? She said she said bitterly.
That's right. We've never gotten an official statement from either Disney or Netflix about why these shows were being canceled, aside from the viewership for these most recent seasons wasn't what they were expecting. But we've watched this pattern of kind of systematically all of the Marvel Netflix shows. They get to the end of this most recent season and then they kind of don't get renewed for another season, even though they seem to be growing in popularity, not shrinking. So it's kind of a tough call. I would say that, you know, Netflix knows that Disney is preparing a pretty significant competitor and is kind of cutting them off while they still can, instead of continuing to give Disney money.
Right. Okay. So the new releases on the platform, like Captain Marvel, does that mean Disney's relationship with Netflix is over? I mean, they'll control all of that content then.
Yeah, that's going to be one of the big things that we're going to see when this comes out. It wouldn't surprise me to see Disney do, you know, kind of timed exclusives where you can watch, you know, movies first on this Disney service and then available in other places. You know, recent history has shown Disney has been actually pretty keen to put movies on Netflix relatively shortly after they've released the DVD. Mm-hmm. But this is probably going to change a little bit. We're probably going to see, you know, kind of unique releases to the Disney store first. And it really wouldn't surprise me. We don't have a release date for when Disney Plus is going to start. Mm-hmm. It really wouldn't surprise me if a movie as popular as Captain Marvel, or maybe even the next Star Wars movie at the end of the year, is what they use to kind of launch this service and get people hooked.
So they are going to involve the Star Wars franchise.
This is all of the Disney properties. Mm-hmm. We're going to see the Marvel movies are going to make it here. The Star Wars movies are going to make it here. And that's actually going to be kind of a big deal, because it'll be the first time that all of the Star Wars movies have been together in one place on a digital service. So people who are Star Wars fans are going to have quite a bit to just kind of watch all in one place, which is going to be a new thing.
A fantasy of some people. What kind of original content can we expect? This is a family channel, right?
This is going to be a family channel. We have some confirmation of some original shows that are coming. Some of them are going to be is a part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. There have been two different shows that have been confirmed that are going to be taking place for people who are a big fan of those. You know, those characters, we're going to see unique shows there. There's also going to be a whole bunch of animated kid-friendly content. New seasons of shows are going to show up here. And they haven't done a lot in the way of confirming new kid-friendly shows that are only going to be in the Disney streaming app, I think, because the Disney TV show TV channels are still immensely popular. Mm-hmm. So pulling away from that is not something Disney's willing to do just yet. But it wouldn't, you know, there's definitely going to be a thing that will happen in the future.
Well, that's why I don't understand why they pulled Jessica Jones, because that's not family fare. Do you envision maybe Disney doing something a little racier down the line?
It wouldn't surprise me, especially since as part of the acquisition of Fox Marvel content, we're also going to see, you know, technically Disney now or will very soon own Deadpool, which is very much not a family friendly movie. So, you know, they do have these films that are, you know, not geared towards the most family friendly audiences, and they're popular. They do well. So continuing in that direction probably wouldn't surprise me. It's also important to remember that Jessica Jones leaving Netflix was not Disney's decision. That was entirely Netflix's decision.
Well, I resent it. And that's what
I agree.
Say.
We still get to one more season, though.
Bitter, bitter, bitter. When does that start?
Soon, I think, in like a month and a half.
Really? Because I haven't seen anything on that, so I just figured they weren't coming back at all. Well, that's good. Okay. Hope lives. Nintendo Virtual Reality. You recommend people stay away from the Nintendo Switch VR kit. Why?
This is just an all-around bad idea. I have you've done a lot of work with virtual reality over the last couple of years, and a big part of that has been trying to figure out when and where is appropriate for kids to use this technology, because it's a question I get asked by parents a lot. Is it safe for me to share this cool thing that I have with my kid? Mm-hmm. And so I've talked to a lot of pediatricians and a lot of different professionals in both, you know, the eye care side and also the eye engineering side, people who are building, you know, kind of eye technology for these headsets, for what makes things kind of different and special for these headsets. And the Nintendo modification to the Switch kind of doesn't check any of the boxes for things that are safe. The Nintendo Switch display itself is actually a really low resolution display. It's a 720p resolution display, which is a lower resolution than most televisions now. And it's in this kind of form factor that is far enough away from your eyes that it doesn't cause a problem. But by taking that display and kind of moving it to 3 inches away from your eyes, it makes it really difficult to focus on any of the things that are on the display. And as a part of the way virtual reality headsets like this one work, you're actually taking that display and cutting it half and then hooking a magnifying glass up to it. So you're going to have a lot of things that are going to be very blurry. They're not going to be in focus. They're not going to look great. And that actually causes additional eye strain, which is the thing that causes problems for kids in the first place. Because after talking to several pediatricians, it's you know, virtual reality headsets aren't necessarily bad after a couple of minutes, but you want to make sure that you're taking regular breaks, like every 10 or 15 minutes, because virtual reality headsets kind of lie to your eyes and tell you that it's okay to focus on something that is artificially farther away. Mm-hmm. So your eyes kind of relax in a way that it wouldn't in the real world. And if you do that for a long period of time, it can actually cause the muscles in your eyes to misbehave, which can cause vision problems down the road. This, on top of having those same kind of limitations, that there is never a point in which you're going to be able to look in these headsets and see a clear, sharp image. So your eyes are not only relaxing artificially, but they're also straining to kind of make sense out of what it is that's being seen.
Well, so why do you think Nintendo missed the mark? Were they just trying to go on the cheap here or didn't do their research?
So it's a combination. The kit that's being sold here is actually part of a larger setup that Nintendo made called Labo, L-A-B-O. And it's a bunch of cardboard-made kind of gadgets that are just kind of this cutesy fun thing that are a relatively inexpensive add-on to the Nintendo Switch that make it just very interactive. Get up and move around in a very unique way. The kits that already exist for this are actually very good, and I've recommended them on a couple of occasions. But the virtual reality kit, takes that experience and adds this box that you hook up to your face, and that's where I run into a pretty serious problem because the display on the Switch is just not good enough for that.
And it's heavy or clunky, right?
It is. Yeah, this is not a light console. You know, this is using a very similar design to what you would use for phone-based virtual reality headsets. New York Times shipped cardboard virtual reality headsets a couple of years back,
yeah.
And you just stuck your phone in the box. This is a very similar concept, but the Nintendo Switch is larger, heavier, and has a far worse display than what you have on most phones. And so it really causes some discomfort on top of just not being fun to use.
Hmm. Bill in Columbus, you have a question for Russell Holley. Hi, Bill.
Hi. Last week you said that Walmart has a new VR thing to hook to a PC that's like $20, $30, and $50 or some such. Walmart here in Columbus has never heard of it. You didn't give a specific name. I have nothing to search for, and I can't find it online either.
Oh, my goodness.
That's it, Russell. You're fired. do you remember that, Russell?
I do remember that, and I will probably be able to find the name in just a moment, but it's
because Russell can Google and talk at the same time, Bill.
That's
so
right.
We'll find that out for you, Bill. Hang on.
Yeah, so it's definitely a big thing. The ones that you're looking for from Walmart are actually called VR Tech. It's VRTEK. Is the manufacturer, and they are supposed to be shipping at Walmart. They were supposed to start arriving at Walmart headset stores last week.
Okay. VR Tech, T-E-K. And I'm wondering if you can go online and order them.
It's certainly possible, yeah.
Because, you know, Walmart wants to compete. Okay, Bill, so hope you got that. VR Tech should be shipping to Walmart by now. Check again. Thanks a lot for that call. And you do, as far as these kits go, you know, one of the added things to all these kits that you like about them is that you get to assemble things too, right?
Right. The cardboard assembly process is by far the most entertaining part of this experience because Nintendo made a game out of it. Like you put the cartridge into the game system and it walks you through step by step, you know, kind of assembling this thing. And it's something that Nintendo could probably sell to the people at IKEA and make $1 billion because it made the assembly so much easier.
Okay. Another satisfied customer of IKEA speaks. Hygiene concerns. What?
Well, so this is made of cardboard and kids are, you know, gross.
Yeah.
So the concept here is you are holding a headset up to your face and you're moving around a lot, and the cardboard that is touching your skin is going to absorb the oils and you know, stuff that's coming mm-hmm. from your body. And you can't clean cardboard. Like, there are some plastic pieces here that you'll be able to wipe off, but a lot of the stuff on the sides is just regular cardboard that will absorb those oils. And so the whole point of the system, Nintendo's own marketing for it, is having a group of people in the room and being able to pass the headset from person to person.
Yeah.
And that's just kind of gross.
Yeah.
When I do that here, when I have people trying on virtual reality headsets here at my house, I have cleaning equipment that I use before another person goes and touches it. And that's just not going to work the same way when what you're using is made of cardboard.
Interesting. And if parents are looking for an affordable but higher quality alternative, are you pointing to the VR Tech at Walmart or what?
If you have a PC capable of running it, then the VR Tech headsets are definitely a way to go. If you want something that's kind of standalone, it doesn't require a lot of extra work, I'm still a really big fan of the Oculus Go headset.
Mm-hmm.
$199 is certainly a lot more expensive than the $80 Nintendo is asking for this headset, but you don't have to hook up another computer to it. You don't have to hook a phone up to it. You don't have to do anything. It's all contained in that system. And it's designed for smaller heads, so it works better with younger audiences.
Microsoft is unveiling some news later this afternoon about the video game Halo. What's going on?
Yeah, so Halo has been this kind of really exciting franchise for a long time for Microsoft. It started off as a PC game, and then it moved to the Xbox when Microsoft was trying to make the Xbox a big kind of thing that competed with the PlayStation. And that actually upset a lot of PC gamers for a long time because the game was only available on these Xbox consoles, even though it started off as a PC game. So PC gamers have been frustrated with this for a long time. And there's a lot of evidence that suggests that later today, Microsoft is going to announce that the Halo Master Chief Collection, which is this massive collection of all of the Halo games that have come out so far, will be available on PC, which means all of those games that PC gamers have missed out on, if they decided they weren't going to get an Xbox, will now be able to play through that entire library.
How big of a deal is this?
Well, you know, I live with someone who is just a dyed-in-the-wool PC gamer, refuses to touch a controller for anything, and she is very excited. So I assume that there is more than just one person like that in the world, because that is why Microsoft is planning to do this release. And so it should be a pretty exciting thing for people who enjoy playing on their computer versus a television.
Is there an age limit?
No, this game is the games are pretty much like any other first person shooter. I wouldn't any shooter that you're comfortable with, you know, modern shooter hooking a kid up to, then you're going to run into the same thing here. You're not shooting people, and the aliens bleed blue and green, if that's a thing that matters to you. It's definitely a violent game. So something to keep in mind.
Russell Holly, thanks as always for your help today. I appreciate it.
Always a pleasure.
That's Russell Holly, Android Central contributing editor. And that's it for Tech Tuesday today. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.